Hello, everybody, and thanks for coming to this Hellenic Observatory seminar. It's a pleasure to introduce to you our speaker today, Professor Yannis Katsoulakos, who's Professor of Economics at the Athens University of Economics and Business. He's been at the department for many years and has assumed many roles, including head of the department and at the university, university vice rector in 2007-2011, and also director of graduate studies for the Applied Economics and Finance program. Professor Katsoulakos is currently visiting professor with us at the Hellenic Observatory, and he has a long link with the LSE, having obtained his master's in economics and his PhD also here at the LSE. He was a research fellow at the CEPR, the Center for Economic Policy Research, from 1990 to 2001, and has published widely in international academic journals, including quite a few in the Economic Journal, European Economic Review, Scandinavian Journal of Economics, and others. He also has policy experience, and I should get my glasses with me, but policy experience as a member of the Greek National Committee of Economic Advisors in 2002-2004, and also experience with executive teaching and technical education programs on competition policy, competition economics, macroeconomics, of course, and industrial organization, which is his broader field of research. He's going to talk to us today about national competition and competitiveness policy for Greece, and I have privileged information that this pulls together different pieces of research that Professor Katsoulakos has done over the years. So, Professor Katsoulakos, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Vasilis. Thanks a lot for the opportunity to join this seminar series and to be here in the Hellenic Observatory. I'm very glad to be here. I'm very glad to see some of my old students from ASOE as well. This is really nice. I am sure there are so many of them in London. As Vasilis said, I'm going to be... This is the main reference for my talk, though it's not going to be the only one. Some years ago, some very prominent economists, Megier, Pissarides, Vagianos, and Vetas, decided to publish a book on issues relating to the Greek crisis. Why? And what can we do about it, and how can we make the future a bit better? And they invited people to contribute discussing issues related to different issues that they thought were important. And at some point they approached me and George Genakos, who is my colleague, and George Hoopis, who is an expert on telecom regulation, to contribute a chapter on product market regulation and the competitiveness. So this is like a policy report, if this is the best way to describe it. In the meantime, in the last 6 or 7 years, I have been doing some research. So this is going to be a combination of policy reports I have written and more basic research, and some of these empirical, which I'll show you, about competition policy and its impact on productivity growth, with focus on Greece. So this is the good thing for us here. And also some of the work that I am doing on in relation to measuring the quality of competition policy enforcement in Greece. So I have a number of projects in other countries. So we decided when I applied to the Hellenic Observatory, I was asked, tell us some research that you are doing that relates to Greece. And I thought, I'm doing in 8 countries, from South Africa to Russia, and from India to Chile, work on measuring the quality of enforcement of competition authorities. And I thought, who should do this for Greece, given that one of my PhD students is a director of economics, actually, in the Greek authority, and she could get all the data that we needed, and so we are doing that, and we already have some results, which I'll show to you, and I hope over the year that I'm going to be here, we are going to complete this and get some interesting comparisons between Greece and other countries. So this is the background. I didn't know that it works like this, because usually I bring everything down. The basic premise behind all this work is that the way that the extent to which and how we regulate markets is very important for productivity growth, for competitiveness, for welfare. And as I said, I'm going to talk about excessive regulation issues. I'm going to talk about competition policy, which is supposed to be a good thing. It's supposed to be policy that we need in order to make markets work better. And I'm going to talk about sectoral regulation, which is also a regulation that we think that it is good and we should have. But it is ex-ante regulation, not like competition policy, which is ex-post regulation. And I'm going there to focus on sectoral regulation. I'm going to focus on telecom and energy. So here we are. We understand that we believe that one of the main determinants of competitiveness is the quality of the set of rules and regulations that govern the operation of markets. So if regulations are well designed, they are suitably applied and effectively enforced, then they can promote competition, investment, entrepreneurship, and make a country competitive. On the other hand, over-regulation is generally associated with creating inefficiencies and poor economic outcomes. I'll give you a number of references to empirical work on all these statements that sort of try to corroborate that these are statements are true. The fundamental mechanism on which I'm going to focus is that the regulatory burden reduces the intensity of competitions in the markets, and this loss of competition reduces allocative, productive, and dynamic efficiency. So the link is through the intensity of competition in everything that I'll be talking about, except when I'm talking about ex-ante regulation for telecoms and for the energy sector. Another thing that we know, I mean, these are things that we know from empirical research from countries all over the world that has been done in the last at least 20 years, and OECD has been spending a lot of its efforts in this type of work, but there are also many independent researchers. What we also know about Greece is that it is one of the most heavily regulated countries among the OECD countries. Actually, if I remember well, a few years ago, I don't know if its position changed, but a few years ago, it was the most heavily regulated with Hungary. So we had our place was the worst place in among OECD countries with Hungary. Another thing that it is important for Greece that we know more informally, we now try to establish more formally, is that important regulations, where we need regulations, like in the context of competition policy and sectoral regulation, we are not doing a good job. And I'm trying to show to you that for this, for the enforcement of competition law, and for sectoral regulation, we are also quite bad. We are not doing the things that we should be doing. And if there is a way in which you could measure quality in for this type of things, then the quality in Greece is quite low. Now, to start with, let me try to show some things that back up some of the statements that I made on the first slide. And to do that, you can think about many of the empirical studies, econometric studies, but I thought it would be useful to start with looking at look at Greek competitiveness through the lenses of the indicators of the World Economic Forum, the World Bank, and the OECD. So here is the first one is the one that is everybody seems to be usually talking about, which is the Global Competitiveness Index that is being developed by the World Economic Forum, and it is done. This is done every year. So this is a composite index that is based on perceptions. I should stress that, because some people find this is not a very good thing to do, to create composite indicators based on perceptions. And perceptions by people that they survey every year, and they are business leaders, some government people, some non-government organizations, etc., etc. And this is supposed to capture the micro and the macro foundations of the national competitiveness of a country. And this is supposed to depend on all the institutions, the policies, and the factors that determine the level of productivity of the country. So they have 12 pillars, they put together, it's sort of very complicated, the type of how they do it. But finally they get one number, and that allows them to rank the countries. So you see here, the ranking for this is the ranking for Greece over the years, starting from 2001 and going to 2017. The data that we have actually in the chapter I mentioned to you end in 2015, because we were writing this in 2016, so I had to update this. The updating actually proved some very interesting point. When I looked at this, and I looked some other diagrams, similar diagrams like the Greek debt to GDP ratio, then they have some striking features. One of those that I find extremely striking, especially because of the lack of discussion in Greece about this specific feature of the data, is that you see the situation was not so bad in the early 2000s, and actually if you extend back it wasn't so bad either. But then in 2004, it starts deteriorating, and it is deteriorating very rapidly. And it keeps deteriorating at least until 2011-12. So here we have a number of years where things seem to be going very bad. And if I show you some other indicators, like the institutional efficiency indicator, here I have the goods market efficiency indicator and the labor market efficiency indicator. They show the same picture as you would expect. I mean, the composite indicator for the global competitiveness is essentially puts together all these various sub-indices that we are looking here. But you see, we start quite well. We start quite well in some things. In labor market efficiency, we are very bad also in 2006. Okay, I mean 111. I should have said that this is for about 135 countries, which means that we are amazingly the bottom of 133 countries in the world in terms of the labor market efficiency rankings. And I have two more here, which are the this is something that it's very much of interest to my talk. Intensity, that's why I have put it here, intensity of local competition and effectiveness of anti-monopoly policy rankings. So the perception that those surveyed have about our anti-monopoly policy, which, as you see, is really not good at all. At some point in 2015, we were 104. This is something that makes the people in the competition authority in Greece very, very upset. But this is the perception about what they are doing. I should have said that I was between 1995 and 2005 as a commissioner of the Greek competition authority. So I perhaps have some responsibility for the state of things there, but I don't know. This is the World Economic Forum. The World Bank shows a very similar thing. So in the World Bank, we have indicators relating to regulatory quality, government effectiveness, control of corruption, and rule of law. These four indicators, they have six, okay, but these four are the ones that are most interesting of interest to us. So this is between 0 and 100, and the higher the better you are. You will see that on average, Greece is lower than it is the average in OECD countries, but also you will see a constant decline, a deterioration in what is happening to Greece. If you compare what is happening here, for example, what is happening here, which is the year 2017, okay, and this is all across the four indicators that we are measuring. And if you want, I can finally show to you the OECD product market. This one is also perception based. Okay, this one also uses objective data, like the degree of price controls in the economy, the fraction of the state share productive in productive sectors, etc., etc. So one can. Sorry, one can say that this may be the more objective one of the three. But the picture is quite similar. Here I chose to work with product market regulation, the state control score, the barriers to entrepreneurship score. This varies between 0 and 6, and the higher the worse now for the country. So you see that here again, Greece is clearly worse than the OECD average across the whole range of these three indicators. So if we wanted to summarize the picture that emerges from this from the diagrams that we just saw, well, the picture seems to be quite clear. We would say that very high barriers to entry, very heavy state control, inefficient regulatory framework, and very restrictive product market regulation, and all these, as we said, lead to lower competition, decrease in the intensity of competition, and the decline of overall competitiveness. It seemed to be the case that, look at the original, it seemed to be the case that after the crisis and with the measures that we are taking and the memoranda, that there has been an improvement. You see here, and you can see it in the other diagrams as well. But unfortunately, we were quite happy when we were writing the chapter. We thought, oh, things may be getting better. But unfortunately, this has not been sustained. And in 2017, we were again in a worse position than we were before. And this is true here, except of the top figure, the labor market efficiency seems really to be doing some things, all the reforms that we have been undertaking. This is true here. And therefore, that's why we say here that the GCI main subindices have returned to their negative trend since 2013. So there are, if we have to have in one sentence the conclusion from all this, is that there are very important differences that remain and indicate that the process of deregulation to reinvigorate the competition in the internal product market still has a long way to go. So I want to discuss, to take a closer look at these and to discuss why it is, and why these things are so bad in Greece, and also offer some policy recommendations about how we can change this, which was the main purpose of that article. And as I said before, also give you some empirical results about more specific issues. So the main reasons behind the lack of effective competition in Greece seems to be two main factors can explain this. First of all, the excessive low-quality regulation for a very large number of markets that results in a very high regulatory burden. And then the second thing is the inefficient implementation of regulation in those markets where this is necessary in the form of competition law and sectoral regulation. in order to improve market outcomes at the welfare in oligopolistic markets and in natural monopolies where we want to use the sectoral regulation. This seemed to be very important in restricting the intensity of competition and hindering the growth of entrepreneurship and innovation. And as I said at the beginning, there has been quite a lot of empirical work on the impact of regulatory burden. If we want to focus on Greece, then there was, for example, a study in 2002 by OECD that according to which if there was a comprehensive regulatory reform in Greece, the long-term effect would be to increase GDP by 15%, no less than 15%. There was then a more limited but more in-depth work undertaken by OECD, in which actually my colleague Christos Giannakos worked with them, much more recently, in 2014, which focused on a quite small set of regulations, because the amount of regulations that we have is enormous. So they focused on what they thought were some very important regulations. 555 was the number. And they were concentrated in four sectors. And the benefits from removing these regulations in these four sectors would be 2.5% of GDP. I mean, we're talking about very big benefits there. And at about the same time, 2014, IOV, the institute in Athens that undertaking a similar study, calculated that the long-run effect in the Greek economy of removing, of lowering the regulatory comprehensive deregulation in terms of removing the excessive regulation that there is in markets is of the order of 8% GDP. So it's the impact is really very significant. Now, we think that together with the inefficient implementation of competition law and sectoral regulation, these are probably the most important structural problems in the Greek economy. As we saw there, the things in the labor market seems to be getting better. What seems to be still very bad is, I'll try to explain why, it's still very bad, is the situation regarding regulatory quality and how many regulations we have in the product markets. So I'm going to talk about one and two in turn. Starting with one, just some numbers so that you understand the magnitude. So this is another report that was done by OECD in 2011. And consider regulations between 1995 and 2005. So if they counted the amount, the laws that were passed through parliament, the presidential decrees, there may be some duplication here, okay? Then the ministerial decisions, regional decisions, and decisions of municipal authorities, forgetting about duplication, there were about 5,716 regulations per year, or 477 regulations per month, on average, being generated in Greece during that period. Really, we love this. We just love creating regulations. So even if it's just here, you see, even if we don't take into account the regional decisions and the regulations by municipal authorities, the number still is extremely high. It's 386 regulations per month. Now, this is the extent. The quality, you have to look at specific cases in order to understand why we say that the quality of regulation is very low. And one thing we did in the study is to look at some specific sectors that were pointed out by OECD in their 2014 study. And we have, there are a few more, trucks, market regulation for fruits, fresh pasteurized milk, something that has been discussed in Greece for decades, bread and bake-off, and lawyer's advertising fee. there are many, many, many more. As it says there, conveying the depth and breadth of the various rules applied in various product markets is truly daunting. So, why? Well, if you wanted to think it a little bit abstractly, theoretically, one way to go about it is to use theory which he then tested in various countries by Sol Estrin, who relates the emergence of many unnecessary regulations to rent-seeking activities by corrupt officials, by corrupt state bureaucrats, essentially. So what they want to do is to raise barriers, if you think in the most abstract way to think, so that if somebody wants to participate in the market activity, he has to ask the bureaucrat to remove these barriers. And the bureaucrat, of course, will be happy to do that, but there is where the rent-seeking comes in place. And if you looked at the indicators before, Greece is supposed to be, in terms of corruption, it's supposed to be one of the worst places in the world also. Okay, this I can give you one more example because it's always to me sounds fascinating, which corroborates this, which is the number of permits that somebody needed to get in order to enter the renewable energy sector, for whom companies could get funding from the government in order to participate in this. So the government had realized that this is an important thing to develop. But on the other hand, there were, until a few years ago, I think they're probably similar today. I haven't heard that this has been changed. There were 33 permits that some company had to get in order to undertake the investment. So the company people, some big industrialists in various activities that got interested in that because they realized that there were profit opportunities, some of them got fed up with this because they had 33 times to compensate somebody in order to move and get the next permit. Now, compare this with Denmark. How many there are in Denmark? One. There is one thing that you have to do. And then compare also to Portugal, which is also interesting. Because in Portugal, they have more or less an equal number, but over the years, they reduced it to three. So they sort of thought about it. It's not a good idea. They said they reduced it a lot. But here, they seem to be, these things seem not to be improving so much. Now, We think that the main cause for this is that there is no institutional framework for the assessment of regulations which allocates responsibilities to suitably organized and staffed institutions, to examine existing regulations and to abolish those that are not necessary or create high social cost, and to forbid the creation of new regulations which are expected to yield this result. There's just no institutional framework. There is no authority. Usually these authorities are called Authority for the Assessment of the Effect of Regulations, AAER, not any other institution or mechanism. So in the law 4048 of 2012, aimed to improve the regulatory governance, proposed principles and procedures of good regulations, but was never implemented, and in any case did not propose the appropriate organizational decision-making structure and processes that are necessary. So this is where I wanted to put a lot of emphasis. See, it was in 2007, actually, that there was also a discussion going up very high in the government at the time also. There was also a discussion in the government about doing something about this, proposing to create something. There was discussion. I know because they usually would come to some people, there aren't so many in Greece, that they may be able to tell them some. So the advisor of the prime minister or whatever, they say this. So nothing happened. Then in 2012, there was a law, this law, and again things seemed to be moving, but they didn't move. And since then, nothing has happened. So it seems as if there is a complete consensus among all the political parties that this is not necessary to do something serious about it. which is fascinating when you think about it. I mean, how serious the problem is, that all political parties seem more or less to agree that this is an issue that we can leave and let it go and see what happens in the future. So we'll propose what the institutional framework would be later on the recommendations, but institutional frameworks there are for many, many years in many, many countries. I mean, even in Turkey. Turkey has done an amazing amount of regulatory reforms following countries like Australia and Mexico, who did the benchmarks of what has been happening in this area. In Australia, did this over 1990 to 1995 and removed thousands of regulations. This is a country where there has been a lot of empirical work trying to prove the impact of that, and the impact seems to have been very significant. And then other countries started following this type of countries. And I just mentioned Turkey because it's not a serious country. In some ways, it's more backward, its economy, from the Greek economy, and that it takes some measures would make us think that what is such a big problem here. Anyway, so I'll come to some recommendations about how to do that later. So let me go to number two the second issue, which is the inefficient implementation of competition law and sectoral regulation. There are two areas where the government has a very clear role to play in terms of market regulation. And these two areas where the government has a very clear role to play are related to competition law, which in the United States existed for 135 years, and in many European countries since before the World War II, and in Greece since 1979. So we have quite a lot of experience. Certainly relative to the younger jurisdictions. And it has become extremely important throughout the world. We have now 140 competition authorities throughout the world, so everybody's taking this very seriously. So that's one thing where we need regulation, and the regulation that we undertake there is regulation of firms that have excessive market power or very significant market power and are dominant and undertake some practices that could harm the consumers. Of course, one of the main parts of this is cartel policy, and the third part is merger policy, the control of mergers. So you have competition law, and then you have the regulation of network markets. There are many network markets, but I'll stress here telecom and energy. As somebody who works on competition for many years, I can tell you that there is right now a lot of discussion about extending the ex-ante regulation in other network markets that we would never have thought of a few years ago. Ex-ante regulating companies like Amazon, for example, or like Google, or like Facebook, companies like this, because it seems that their market power, on the one hand, has grown beyond expectation, I mean, what's happening there, and that the traditional approach based on pure competition law doesn't seem to be working in terms of minimizing the negative effects of their monopoly power. So some very, very serious people, both here in Europe, I mean, and in the United States, are thinking to extend ex-ante regulation for this type of situation. So it's much broader than it seems from what I'm going to be saying. Let us start with competition policy and competition law. Here is some work that is more specific and is more basic research, though applied empirical research. So I wanted to talk to you about some evidence on the effects of competition policy. And there have been some work recently by a number of co-authors that you see on the first and second publication that is cited quite often now. We tried to use their methodology in terms of, in this paper here, He tried to use this the methodology of constructing indicators of the quality of competition policy and to it for a different set of countries, and especially including Greece. And so what we this is a summary of what we are finding, which is for Greece is very positive. So as I said, we captured the quality of competition policy through the CPI, competition policy indices that they proposed. So essentially there is a questionnaire that is sent to the competition authority and they have to fill it very detailed. And then they create this composite index, but it is based on objective facts relating to what they are doing there, the decisions and where are the decisions, and their sanctioning policy, their leniency policy, and all these things that they undertake. So we did this, including Greece, using panel data from 1995 to 2003, was the period, and there are 22 industries. And what we find for Greece is that for the whole sample is that CPI has a positive and statistically significant effect on labor productivity growth, which is also the finding of the people that I mentioned in the previous slide. But what we did, which they did not do, is to investigate possibly heterogeneity of this effect by separating the countries into what we call laggards and leaders. You might remember that in the literature on the empirical effect of competition and innovation, they do also this type of methodology. So we had 10 countries, so we split it into 5 which are laggards on the basis of both of their distance from the benchmark. So the benchmark was Britain, actually, in our sample. So it has the highest CPI, the most sustainably high CPI. But also there are objective factors like how many years the authority has been there, it is doing what it has been seen experience. So there is more the mature and immature sort of jurisdictions. And Greece is, of course, in the laggards. And what we find is that the effect of the CPI on labor productivity growth for the laggards is about 3 times larger compared to the effect estimated for all 10 countries in the sample. And if you look at the leaders, then our finding is that the effect is small and statistically significant. Now, if we estimate the effect only for Greece, then the coefficient increases quite a lot, and this actually reinforces our finding that gains from increasing the quality of competition policy and making product market competition more effective are to be reaped mainly by countries for which there is the greatest scope for improving the effectiveness of product market regulation. So if there is this is important, it is especially important for Greece.
Would you describe a bit the methodology, how you find that?
I have the paper here, which I can give to you.
We can discuss this in the Q&A afterwards.
He tells me that you have 10 minutes, which is impossible to finish in 10 minutes.
11.
Sorry?
Or maybe could you say the size of the coefficients, possibly?
Sorry?
Like the size. I mean, the significance of how big is the impact.
Yes. I'm sorry, I don't remember the details. But for the laggards, it's much more significant than it is in the Bucchirossi et al. Papers. For the leaders, it turns out to be insignificant, whilst they, for their overall sample, they didn't make the split. They found that it was significant. Now, if we want to look a bit more at the quality of institutions, then we have to think about issues like which some of these are taken into account in the CPI, like the independence of the Competition Commission. So the greater the independence, the higher the more you believe that enforcement will be efficient. It's quite interesting that a few weeks ago, actually, we had reason to believe that Greece is not at its best in relation to the independence of Competition Commission. because the prime minister's legal advisor became the president of the competition commission. Then you have the whether or not there is a specialized court of appeal. As you will see in a moment, a very large proportion of decisions made by the competition authority are appealed. And the thing is that in Greece, for example, they are being discussed at the Protodikio, the Diketiko Protodikio, so the administrative court there. Then there the judges have absolutely no experience and no knowledge of issues relating to competition. Then what's most important, you need to look at whether legal standards are used. Now, if you are not competition economist, then you'll think, what is this? Well, it's a decision rule guiding the assessment procedures. And economists have, over the years, sort of delineated the type of legal standards that should be used for assessing specific conducts. So if you say cartel, you should use, this is the ideal legal standard. If you have some abuse of dominance practice, you should be using this legal standard, okay, et cetera, et cetera. So are they these standards that we believe are the appropriate ones being used in practice? Then the extent to which there are insufficient resources, of course, in terms of quantity and quality, the delays, which is the very bad news for the firms, and sometimes they have to wait for something like 10 years being investigated for their case to come. So imagine the uncertainty when a dominant firm is waiting for 10 years for its case to be discussed by the competition authority, and the authority takes another 4 or 5 years in order to then reach a decision. And then one has to look that at the competitive neutrality principle. What is this? Is whether you treat state organizations in the same way as private companies. Now, there are organizations like the EBRD, for example, that they think that this is the most important thing. They think that countries differ, especially because in some countries this is part of the law, like all Scandinavian countries, this is part of the law. It's in the law, it says so. And in other countries it is followed even though it's not part of the law, like the UK. So you know that it is followed by the way that the policy is implemented. But in Greece it's not the case. There have been many circumstances in the past going back, but also more recently that this is not true. So I said to you that we can think about some sort of optimal decision procedures for assessing what firms are doing and deciding whether they violate the law or don't violate the law. I have been involved in a number of articles in this literature, which sort of theoretical literature about what is the optimal legal standard. And then I have more recently been involved in empirical work, you see, in a number of countries about trying to measure the actual quality relative to the ideal. And this is the work I mentioned at the beginning that I have been doing in Greece, which I was motivated when I actually applied for coming here. And we have built up a methodology which has been used. We have many collaborators, of course, in these countries. We don't do it on our own, and is used there. And just to give you a feeling, here is some cross-country data which give the total number of antitrust decisions, not mergers. So antitrust means that we don't look at mergers here. So if you look at DigiComp, for example, there were per year about 19 decisions being undertaken. And in Greece, it was 7.5. Turkey was better. France was much better, actually, than Greece. So this is an indicator that the authority is not doing enough. But there are many other things. You see here the appeal rates. They can be enormous. In Greece they are 90%. This also reflects, however, that the cost of appeal is very low in Greece. So everybody thinks, okay, why not appeal? But look at the annulled rates. I mean, this 30% means that of those decisions that were appealed, 30% were annulled by the court. So they said, we don't like what you decide, take it back. Or not take it back, we just think that the company did not violate the law, full stop. So you cannot impose a penalty, and you cannot tell the firm to do something else that what has already been doing. So this is law. Look at this here, just telling you a bit fast, I understand, but look at this in South Africa, 80%. Why? Is South African authority doing something bad? No, it is actually doing something much better than the Greek authority. What is this? That Greek authority uses a very low, as we say, standard decision procedure without using any economics, which is exactly what the judges at the courts of appeal want to see. So the disputability of the decision of the authority is not there. There is no disputability. So 70% go through. In South Africa, they use an amazing amount of economics. Of course, this is related to the fact that the British had established the authority there and worked quite a lot for many years. So this means that because they use so much economics, the disputability of decisions is higher, but the quality of the decision is much, much higher. This is reflected here. This is affects. This is an economic-based indicator. So you see, it's 3.5 in Greece. It is 5.3 in South Africa. This means that they are using much more economics in deciding than we do in Greece. There are some other data that I can use you. That is in Russian, and that's for Greece. And this gives, compared to Russia, which has a competition authority for only 10 years, we are doing better. The quality of enforcement, if you look at this, has a maximum of 7. I'm thinking about this thing here. The quality of enforcement. It has a maximum of 6. So if you don't look at cartels, price fixing, and you look at other practices, because for some reason in Greece we do quite a lot of economics in relation to cartels when we should not. In cartels you don't need to do any economics. You just find that there is a cartel and you just penalize it very heavily for deterrence reasons, and that's it. This is bad. In a sense, because the optimal is 1, you see, here, for the legal standard is 1. So the optimal here is 7, and our indicator is 2, 3, 3. Very low compared to 7, but at least it is higher than Russia, which is 2, 0 and 1. Okay, there's many comparisons here, but some idea about the... So let me tell you about the recommendations. It may be that if you want to have to leave a lot of time for discussion, that I don't talk about sectoral regulation. So it's up to you. So the key recommendation is to have what we call a national competition and competitiveness policy that is based on 3 pillars. This combines an improvement in the enforcement of competition law, but it is not that narrow. It is much wider. So it needs an efficient policy for the adoption and control of regulations, effective institutional framework for competition policy and ex-ante regulation, and very important measures for the development and spread of competition advocacy, which for the moment is something that it has been given to the competition authority. And to be fair, they have done a good job in relation to advocacy in recent years, but they are not enough. What you need is in relation to the first, the efficient policy for the adoption and control of regulations, you need to remove existing regulations without being necessary, the regulations that are thought to hamper growth, allow new regulations to be adopted only as a last resort, reduce the number of new regulations, improve the design and exposed assessment quality of new regulations, and improve the way in which regulations are incremental and monitored. So here, actually, is the British model. We propose that we have looked at, there is, these things have been taken very seriously, of course, in North America, but they're taken very seriously also in many European countries, like Austria, Holland, many countries. But the British seem to be a very effective way to proceed. So they have a reducing regulation committee, which is a subcommittee of the cabinet. This gets advice from the Executive Committee for Better Regulation, which is a governmental committee that provides advice, information, recommendations to ministries in conducting regulatory impact assessment studies. And ECBR can also act as a complaint office for this, which you said is very important. And this is assisted by some strategic group of better regulation, which is outside the government. Okay, and it is in Britain. It is composed by people who come from what in Greece is the SEF, from representatives of the workforce and from representatives of the consumers. So this is the institutional framework that needs to be established. And the main thing that to start with, which will need a lot of patience and but push in order to be realized, is that to remove many of the regulations that are still there.
Yeah, can I propose? I sense there will be quite a few questions. So if you can give us in 3 minutes some entry points on this, and then we can take them in the discussion.
The rest is about sectoral regulation and telecom.
So if you want to say for a couple of minutes some things on sectoral regulation that we can pick up in the discussion. You have.
This is on the telecom regulation, the main thing that we have been discussed in this, and here I'll show you some very, very late developments that George Hoopis sent to me for the purposes of this seminar. So some measures to expand the super fast broadband, on which we are very far behind. And there have been for some time discussions about how to improve that. The European Commission has been supportive. So there was, in the short run, there have been tax discounts that can boost demand. And the way that this could be implemented was by lower VAT rates. Now, what the policymakers have done is to develop some more targeted measures, such as voucher-type schemes. So if you go to get this, then you get something like a 20% discount. And Greece has received approval for such a scheme. George was telling me that he doesn't think that the size of the vouchers that are being contemplated will be big enough in order to have a big impact, but it is a positive development. Now, in the longer run, you need to reduce the investment cost and the risk. And another positive thing that I can tell you is that, again, very recently, has been announced in the last few days, is that 304 million of EU ESI funds has been earmarked for facilitating the rollout of this FTTH in Greece. And the various other measures have started to be implemented relating to easing, facilitating the process of licensing required to access buildings, to dig up roads, etc., etc. In energy, in telecom, things have been going reasonably well. In relation also to the regulator, in energy things have not been so good. Now one can start seeing some light. There were many problems, but I would say that because there are very dominant firms like the EPPC, which has been the public monopoly both in production and in supply for many years. The huge cost asymmetries between PPC and the other generators of energy, because PPC owns lignite facilities, stations. Price regulation was a disaster because it had all these years, it has been what you know as a cost-plus regulation. So there was absolutely no incentive for productive efficiency or for innovation. To some extent, this still remains, but there have been some changes which amplify the problems with this. The wholesale electricity market is a mandatory pool market, and this mandatory pool market where people identify for the some auctioneer, say, who is called Lagier, the amount of power that they would like to put into the market at specific prices, so euro per megawatt. And the next day, this auctioneer will clear the market by taking into account the demand that has been expressed for that market again in the previous day. So there is a day ahead clearing, as it is called. And in this market can work very well. In many countries, they still have pool markets, but not mandatory pools, and not with the features that in Greece the market operates. To tell you one very distorted feature, in order to get private companies investing the generation of energy back in the in the early 2000s, 2002, 2003, they persuaded some industrialists to invest in gas power stations, and they did that. And there are three companies which gas. The thing is that gas is much more expensive than lignite, which is the main fuel used by the PPC. Now, they said, we are going to invest, but it seems to us that if there is low demand, that this can be satisfied by lignite, by PPC, how are we going to get our money back? And the government said at the time, don't worry, we'll have a cost recovery mechanism, as it's called, in the way that the pool works, so that you will always be able to get your money with a reasonable profit. Well, so they can sleep well. And this is going on for all these years, and it's still going on. I mean, there has been a lot of voices about changing the workings of the wholesale market. But the most serious problem has been this issue of PPC being able to produce with much lower cost than the others, and being, of course, because of this, maintaining its monopoly. So what can you do? You can take structural measures, which mean to sell lignite stations. 1 minute. To sell power stations, and we are doing that now, because it was hot, Troika still said, the Troika has told us that we should do, so to sell lignite stations. So we are selling two, the best ones actually are being sold. And the other measure that you could either take, that was not so, it was more light in a sense, was to do something that the French did with EDF, which also can generate energy with nuclear stations, which is extremely cheap also. And what was that? To run auctions of lignite, and the other companies that produce with gas can come into the auction and buy lignite, and then use that and either put it into the pool or sell it directly to the suppliers. So this is, it's called the NOM regulation, and I was in three studies by the regulator about NOM. And in these studies, we concluded that if you let the market deregulate completely, then there should be a shoot up in the price paid by the consumers, because the price would have to reflect the cost of gas stations rather than lignite, okay, as it has been doing for all these years. So there would be a huge increase in price. With NOM, you can show that under alternative market designs, both wholesale and retail market designs, the price increase would not be so high. So there will be price increase. If you stop having cost plus regulation, there will be price increase, but it won't be so high if you do that. Now, of course, if you do that, which is happening now, then it's even better in terms of solving this problem. So. Things are moving, but are moving very slow. And with this movement, you are going also to solve the issue of the multiple decision centers, because this has been a very serious problem of energy regulation, in that you had the energy regulator, RAE, an independent authority, but you had the state as the owner of PPC, the monopoly. So whatever the energy regulator would say, the minister could come and say, never mind, I think that this is what we should be doing. this was a really bad thing also for PPC. PPC had to say, what am I going to do? What the regulator says or what the minister is telling me? But once the PPC becomes essentially, by the sale of lignite power, privatized, then this is something that also will go away in the, at least in the medium run. So, sorry.
We have to stop it here. And
I stopped.
Thank you for the presentation. Okay, lovely. So I didn't stop you. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Very well timed. we can open it directly for discussions. As you collect your thoughts, I will sort of just put a question, but will not ask you to answer it. Just leave it there and then collect also questions. So we have a political economy degree here at the European Institute. We teach one of the things we sort of expose our students is that a paper, I don't remember the author now, but the title of the paper is Why Freer Markets Need More Regulation, and basically makes the case that, you know, the existence of the market relies on regulation. Without regulation, you don't actually have a market. So, you know, you have to have the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's then all about, you know, if you want, what is the optimal set of regulations, and as you were saying, on the implementation. But then in part of the presentation, there was me as the, you know, standing at the audience, there was this kind of tension between, you know, a call for better regulation,
mm-hmm.
but always underpinned by an assumption that less is better, you know, less regulation. So the less regulation was always at the background. So I want to leave this thought with you and then invite questions, and then at some point you can engage with that as well. Can I take Floris first and then Kevin?
I would like to ask you regarding the energy market. Generally, in the UK, there have been policies that promote decarbonization of the economy. And most of the countries are...
Decarbonization?
Yes. Most of the countries actually plan to stop using fossil fuels by 25 or 30. Germany, like a few days ago, said that the plan is to end by 38, which is already too late. And I think Poland and some other countries are also like Greece. So I'm not aware that there is like a plan of a date of stop using fossil fuels. And having in mind how much Greece uses fossil fuels to generate energy and the comments that you made, how could actually we achieve a decarbonization policy that's effective for the Greek economy? And I'm aware that recently like there was an investment plan by Mytilineos to do the closed cycle gas turbine investment, the factory. Gas energy production, and I'm not aware what is going with the renewable energy investments in Greece. So I would like to hear your opinion about it, actually.
That's a long question, so I'll leave it. Yeah.
Shall I?
Yeah.
Decarbonization. After 2013 or 14, the costs of PPC went up because it had to start paying carbon tax as directed by the European Commission. So there was a rise in cost. But this has never made anybody feel that there should be decarbonization in the Greek energy market in the sense of closing down, like the Germans say that they will do their lignite power stations. Actually, as I mentioned, that towards the end there, one of the best things that are supposed to be in terms of the policy agenda in the last few years is that new players will come and actually get the lignite stations from the PPC, but to get them, they are going to use them for quite a long period of time. It's extremely difficult, I think, for Greece to objectively to move away as easily as the Germans will do from lignite energy. So I'm not aware of any plan, long-term plan, to try to get away from this. In the long term, of course, especially in Greece, renewable, the answers about renewable energy, the investment in renewable energy, this for many years it has been going up the fraction very, very slowly. So there was a target which was some years ago, that so that we reach 20% of energy sources.
That was the European directive.
Exactly.
And 28 was a few years ago set until 2020 to have 20% of energy produced by renewables.
Yes. Again, many countries, including Portugal, for example, have already reached this target, but we are quite far away from that. So this is partly related to the regulatory burden I mentioned before, the lack of incentive. But there is another side of the coin that one should mention about renewable energy, which is the following, that if you do invest, then they give you some incentives which come from the fact that one of in terms of the energy that you can sell to the pool, there is a priority given to two energy sources. The first is renewable energy, and the second is hydroelectric energy. So you have priority in selling that to the pool. So you give that, the auditor takes that into account and then moves to other energy sources. And for renewable energy, they give also a fixed price which has been negotiated outside the market. So this has tended over the years to create problems in the sense of making the retail price higher. So if we didn't take the renewable energy into the pool, calculating that given the fixed price that they have to pay to those investing in it, then the retail price for the consumers would have been lower. And a lot of people have been complaining. And actually, in some of the, what I'm saying is that here I'm saying about we need to improve the management of renewable energy resources production because of the impact on prices. Yes. Is there something that I missed in terms of what...
No, I'm just asking because I'm not aware about the Greek economy, but maybe this is actually on the energy demand in the UK, and I work with the minister here, so I was curious.
For energy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is... Sorry, can I learn something as well? I mean, is there in Britain, is there a plan for decarbonization?
Yes, 2025, end of carbon.
End of carbon.
Immediately after Brexit.
okay, there are some security scenarios about the energy use, what depends on the Brexit, but the Great Atlantic by 2025 to stop using fossil fuel.
Really?
Okay. We can follow this
yes.
up later on. Okay. I'll take a question from Kevin. And then.
Thank you for the presentation, which was very clear indeed. 2 points, if I may. Political scientists often deal with the same indices that you have referred to, those that are based on perceptions. But of course, they are indeed contestable and controversial. So I'm not sure that looking at the trend over time for a particular country like Greece, for example, the data would be necessarily so reliable in the sense that e.g. with the impact of the crisis in Greece, does a trend that goes worse or better, you could interpret that quite easily in different ways. That is, precisely because it's based on external perceptions, you could argue that people are realizing that, oh my God, previously we were too generous and we need to lessen the evaluation. So with perceptions, you could argue it's either way, whether the trend is year on year going up or down. And I do thought the impact of the crisis in Greece is ambiguous in that respect. But then I realized that in terms of your argument, that first part of the use of the perceptions indices seemed to be purely illustrative.
Yes.
That it doesn't actually impact on the rest of your argument. It doesn't impact in terms of the rest of the analysis.
In the sense that we have much more other evidence, which is more...
Which are objectively based, quantified, etc. So if we take the perceptions as being a kind of just a quick illustration of a problem, rather than looking at the trend year on year, that would seem to be safer. But the second point was much later on when you referred to the quality of regulation, you referred to the typical example that it would be beneficial to have impact assessments. And then I thought in the context of Greece, that seems to be an ideal which may be difficult to reach in the context of academically, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not aware of many who would regard themselves as public policy specialists in Greek academics, in Greek universities, nor do I think any major universities offer an MPA, for example. So I wonder in terms of resources, impact assessments, absolutely, I would agree about the relevance, but when we think in terms of the supply of expertise to conduct them, I'm left to think of the paucity, the dearth of public policy analysis in within the institution.
So on point completely taken, I have similar view like you about the perception indicators. The OECD tends to be a bit better, not to rely on more objective. On the other hand, I would say that even the perception indicators do give you a feeling that of how bad the situation is.
Yes, but it would be kind of in general on a long-term basis rather than saying that between
this year and this year. Indeed. Yes. The question about RIA, the regulatory impact assessment. It's interesting that you mentioned that. I think there are actually some degrees, even we have some degrees on public management and administration. For the last something like 10 years, it's quite new. We didn't always have it. But I'm trying to think of a better way to say this, and I fail to think a better way to say this. I think there are well-established methodologies, like the OECD methodology, for how to do that. It is really, this is not rocket science. It's
so those who've been studying law could retrain, for example?
I think relatively easily, or economists could be. I mean, at the beginning, it could be that the government, if it sets up the institutions that are necessary, it says, let us invest at the beginning some money in order to get international organizations like OECD, mm-hmm. so that we have this transfer of knowledge that is necessary in order to get this going. But I just feel that this is not what is in the problem that stops our politicians in... setting up the institutional framework that is needed. I think there are other reasons that for this. The state bureaucracy seems to be more important.
Yes.
But it's an issue that goes back many, many years and everybody talks about it. It's just that. Yes. Sorry.
Is there a competition framework within the European Union, both in terms of principles as well as legal framework? And if there is, I assume there is one, if there is, how can this framework can help Greece, or is this framework helping Greece to get out of the current mess, which I have experienced several times, and you were very, very optimistic in your assessment of the situation in Greece.
Optimistic.
I think it's a lot of words, but that's...
I didn't realize.
Yes, I'm not so optimistic about the regulatory burden because I do not see any political willingness to take this seriously.
as I said, that in 2007 they tried to start something, and then 2012 it seemed that George Papandreou, according to his advisors, was taking it very seriously, this idea, in 2011, but nothing happened again. It's sort of as if once you start thinking about it and you starting doing something, somebody comes and says to you, you know, have you thought about this seriously? You know, what this is going to mean? In Australia, they abolished tens of thousands of regulations. If that will be a revolution in Greece among those that get the rents from this type of situation, I think. So I wasn't very optimistic about that. I'm more optimistic about sectoral regulation. I think the Troika has put some rules there about what we should be doing, and all the governments have been following them, including the current government in energy and in telecom. So things seem to be getting better. I'm quite optimistic about that. Solving this problem I mentioned before with PPC had for so many years. It's a shame that in the process PPC is going to become sort of a smallish, not so important company, but this is what it takes to make the market more efficient. I am medium in about competition policy because there are big problems relating to independence, relating to what I call the competitive neutrality principle, relating to resources, because many people, new young people who are good, I mean, who we are talking about, who do masters and they learn a lot of competition economics, and they go there and after 3 years they want to leave because things are not like exactly they thought that they would be, and their approach is not is antiquated, etc., etc. So I'm a bit skeptical about competition policy. I'm more optimistic about sectoral regulation, and I'm very pessimistic about regulatory burden.
So a question from the lady at the very back, and then from the gentleman at the very back. Yeah, but I'll keep in the order of.
Thank you very much for the presentation.
Of course. But I haven't seen a detailed plan by a New Democracy Party being proposed in relation to that. They are saying many things, but I haven't seen something.
If,
to
my, I mean, I wanted to continue. I mean, don't
okay,
think
sorry.
That they would be able to get the advisors that are more unlikely to go to Syriza. And for the
well, the thing is that if they don't want to do something, then they are unlikely to get the advisors who will tell them to do it.
Yeah,
I say.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's take the next question, and then Manuel is here.
Yes, thanks for the presentation. I would like to go back to your estimates about Greece, where you found that competition policy fosters labor productivity. So my first question is how you measure your outcome, and the second is, given that there are a lot of sectors in the Greek economy where they have these specific characteristics where the employee is at the same time the employer. So I'm trying to understand this effect in this context and whether you have run any heterogeneous tests to see from which sectors drive your results. If there are any kind of this analysis in your paper.
Okay. Tell me again the first question. The second one I certainly cannot answer. I cannot remember, but tell me the first one.
The first, how you measure labor productivity, I mean, how you approach labor productivity in your...
So that would be using sectoral GVA
yes.
data?
Yes. We take these 10 sectors, so we...
But you have not run any kind of heterogeneous to see whether the effect is heterogeneous or not across sectors.
This? How do you mean?
Whether there are some specific sectors of technical economy to drive this effect, because
I see. In terms of the result, you mean?
Yes, yes.
Mm.
For example, the parts of the Greek economy where the employees.
Usually I don't look at the empirics a lot, but I'm pretty sure that we don't test for that.
Okay.
Whether there are,
because, for example, if you think about the Greek context in more detail, those sectors of the Greek economy where the labor side is the same with the employer side are the most resistant ones to the introduction of competition policies. So, for example, if you see like lawyers or truck drivers, for example, they have been quite resistant to the introduction of new policies that foster competition. So it would be, I think it would be
But this is they are resistant towards the regulations that are specific to their profession. But competition policy has it's a rather different thing. So it has to do with sort of very tight oligopolies, like the ones we mentioned before. It has nothing to do with this type of sectors that you are mentioning. And you look at very specific things that are captured in this index, and these specific things have to do either how do you enforce against very significant monopoly power, and the very significant monopoly power will have to come from, you can measure it in various ways, but again, it's not relevant to the type of sector that you have in mind. Then cartels and then mergers. So it's just concentrated this, and it creates sub-indices for these three things, for these three elements of competition for policy from which you make your composite for the overall competition policy. So I don't think there is an issue in relation to that.
Okay, we're running a bit out of time, so I'll take the question from Manolis, then Elias,
Okay, I had a more general question about basically the last decade. So there is an impression that a lot of things have changed in terms of regulation increase in that decade, so mainly due to the Troika. So a lot of the OECD recommendations that you mentioned, were a lot of them were implemented. Furthermore, the OECD has this measure of product market regulation, and Greece has been one of the shown the biggest improvement across all countries from a low base, but still it has shown a big improvement. So I was wondering if you have is there any measurable evidence that this has improved internal competition in markets in Greece, or perhaps this impression of reform, maybe it's not reflecting on reality. Or perhaps something else is needed. So maybe these reforms require time to work through. So I don't know if you have any.
Yes, I'll tell you. First of all, because you mentioned that, perhaps you can see what you mentioned here.
Right.
Sorry. Yes, program market regulation. So it's worse than average, but it is improving.
Yeah.
This is the only case that probably this has to do. To say something also about the perceptions being not the best basis to think about this. So can you repeat the last part?
Right, so the question
Yes. You see, it just happened that the other day, as I realized that the person who is sharing the room with me here, which is Nikos Christodoulakis, had a book in his desk, and as I was passing in front of his desk, I noticed that he's reading a chapter in a book, a Greek book, on regulation and the impact of regulation. So I took the book. He's not here, so I took the book and started reading. And I discovered there a chapter by two people. One of them was an old student of mine from some time ago, who now works, I think, for the Bank of Greece, and somebody else, who tried to look empirically at the impact of regulatory reforms in Greece. The thing is that the years that they use stop at 2014 or 15. So they don't have enough years. And the other thing, which is more fundamental for me, is that when we are talking here about they completely neglect. In answer to your question, for whatever is worth it, they find that there isn't serious impact. Okay? But as I said, there are too few years, but also related to the fact that there are too few years, they really do not look at what we are talking about here. We are looking about here removal of regulations that will have some impact on competition. For this to happen, this is going to happen from medium to term run moves of new firms coming in. There being a reorganization in the market. So it's from new entry that you are going to generate these benefits, not from some adjustments in the strategies of existing firms. They are essentially capturing this. So you remove some regulations at the existing firms in the market. So for given competition intensity, the existing firms are doing some beneficial things, which they do not find, however, to be significant. But I'm not surprised that this is their finding. And I think that they're not capturing the serious issue, which is that the change in competition intensity that will occur after some period of time for more regulations, because they stop quite. That's the only study I know. I didn't know any empirical study looking at this, except the studies that I mentioned before, the old OECD and the U of A study that predict that there will be a very big benefit from this. But this is a different type of study, not exposed.
Okay, Ilya, please keep the questions very, very short.
Well, thank you very much. This is a very important but also complex topic. I remember when I was a student in the early 70s at university that we were taught that the government policy was to create monopolies because the market was very small. And in order to create economies of scale, they had to create these barriers to entry to create the champions in every sector. And that, I think, worked in the 50s and the 60s. In the 70s, we saw this, you know, external competition that, you know, made many, many companies well established at the time to disappear. Now, this policy obviously has created a number of networks, and it seems to me that it's very difficult politically to introduce or to remove these rent-seeking barriers and to allow free competition in many sectors because of the political networks, influences, etc., that have been created. I mean, there are specific companies that in northern Greece, for instance.
Northern?
Yes, in northern Greece, that are very good exporters, but without the patronage of the Greek government and the favorable treatment, they would not survive. So, yes, competition is good, but once you start examining the, of course, the benefits to the consumer, that, you know, reduce prices, but also the other side, you know, what will happen to employment and so on, I think the case for freeing the markets is not that strong. I'm not sure.
A quick response
in the
Greek
context.
There is such a thing as excessive competition, clearly, both in theory and in empirically. We know that the relationship between competition and innovation is inversely shaped. Okay? Yes, but nobody believes that we are ever close to where you do not get benefit from competition in the type of markets that we are talking about. So, I mean, I think this is much more excessive competition as in terms of the issues that we are talking about here is a theoretical concept. It doesn't have any sort of usefulness in terms of policy discussions for me.
No, I know. I'm talking about the practice of implementing what you're saying, not against competition. I'm saying that in this specific Greek context.
Oh, yes, 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 of course, yes, I fully agree with you on that.
Mm. Okay, I'm afraid we run out of time. We can have kind of, you can ask the questions a bit later, but we have to release people in the audience who actually want to leave. Before you're excused to leave, let me announce three upcoming events. Wednesday, 6th of February, we have a public lecture by Kostis Hadzidakis, member of the Greek Parliament for New Democracy. under the title Making a Difference in Greece, chaired by Kevin Featherstone. And then on the 20th of February, there's a joke following.
You make it sound like an accusation.
There's a joke following on that. Wait, wait. On the 20th of February, Wednesday, we have an open event on Greece facing the immigration and refugee crisis with speakers including Antigone Liberaki, Lefteris Papagiannakis.
When is it?
20th of February, okay. Here at LSE. Lillian Tsouvi, and again chaired by Kevin Featherstone, so you're getting to the joke. And the 26th of February on Tuesday, we have the next seminar in our series, second next, by our Hellenic Bank Association postdoctoral research fellow in-house Philip Katsinas, who's at the end, talking about transforming the housing system in Greece, austerity and property taxation during the Greek crisis. 6th of February, Kostis Hadzidakis, 20th of February, the event about migration, also chaired by Kevin Featherstone, so that's Kostis. 20th of February, the event on migration and refugee crisis, and the housing system in Greece, austerity and property taxation on the 26th of February. You're all welcome to attend. And please join me in thanking Yanis Katsoulakis for the presentation.